You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I'm your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. The show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, like Spotify, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Apple Podcasts, whatever you like. Or if you don't want to be scrolling through your phone, maybe you like to listen to this show while you're doing dishes or something else, you can always ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. And today we are deep into draft season. There's a little news to go over, so we'll get that out of the way first, and then we will talk about some draft prospects and do the first mock draft Monday of our own, a mock draft that I've actually done myself instead of using one that somebody else did. But first, let's talk a little bit about some of the news. The Vikings retained a few depth pieces that were unrestricted free agents: Rashad Hill, Dakota Dozier, and Brett Jones, keeping together a core of depth offensive linemen that I'm actually a pretty big fan of. There's a lot about those guys that, you know, you might think that, oh, you know, why isn't this person starting? A lot of people ask all the time for, like, Brett Jones to start. I'll talk about that in a sec. But all of them are making the veteran minimum or close to it, something like a $1 million apiece, which is a pretty good deal for a veteran offensive lineman. And if you are wondering why the Vikings would spend time doing this, like I've explained in previous shows, time is not that finite a resource for the Vikings. They can have people doing this while other people are simultaneously negotiating with bigger free agents you might be more interested in. And also, their cost is pretty low compared to what it would cost to replace them if you let somebody like Dozier or Jones or Hill go. I don't think any of those players are of a quality that makes them starting quality players. I think Rashad Hill kind of showed us that when he was a starter for part of 2018. It was a disaster. I don't think Dakota Dozier has ever been a starting quality player. He came in as a backup. I think he's fine as a backup, but if he were to start like all 16 or 17 games of a season, that would be, I think, a bigger issue. And in terms of Brett Jones, I think he might be a starting quality pass protector, but as a run blocker, he has so much trouble with some of the zone run concepts that the Vikings have asked him to do. It's actually kind of catastrophic, and you can't be as bad as he is. I'll link a thread in the show notes so that you can see what I'm talking about here, but he can't climb to the second level, and that's something that guards and interior linemen, he did this at center for the Vikings when he played in 2018, but I think either a guard or a center, you ask those people to climb into the second level very often, where if there's two defensive tackles and three interior offensive linemen, somebody is going to have to go into the second level and go try to find a linebacker, and the fact that you can't reliably ask Brett Jones to do that, I think it precludes him from being a starter. I think it's that big of an issue for him where he just cannot be a starter. Now, as a backup, of course, that becomes a more desperate situation and you kind of just have to put up with it. But I think that's the reason that he never started over Pat Elflein. That's the reason he was benched for most of 2018 once Elflein came back from injury. And I think that that will continue to be a reason that he doesn't start over Pat Elflein, even though I understand that it's super frustrating that Elflein misses in pass protection all the time and has plenty of his own blunders in run block. But I do think that Brett Jones's problem is so catastrophic and it comes up so often. And like we've talked about with interior linemen before, it doesn't take a lot for it to become a big problem. If you mess something up five or six times a game, that's unacceptable. That's not, I mean, we think of bad play as making three or four mistakes a game. And if you do it six times a game, and I think that's what you get with Brett Jones, then you get a bigger issue. And one that you can't exactly put up with just for the sake of it being different or for the sake of it like not being Elflein. All that said, I think I support each one of these moves, especially the Rashad Hill move. I don't think Rashad Hill is a starting quality player, but I do think he's better than most people have at like backup tackle. And having him compete with Oli Udo for like the swing tackle position is like a super healthy competition. And that'll be one that I really look forward to in training camp to see who gets that swing tackle job. And what they might even end up doing is just roster Udo and Hill and you have a backup right tackle, a backup left tackle, and you're just like golden if one of those guys goes down. I really, really like that setup in terms of the depth. Of course, the Vikings have a lot of questions now in terms of their starting positions, especially who's going to be the starting left and right guard, because if the starting left guard is like a competition that Elflein is going to beat out Brent Jones again, like that's unacceptable. That's obviously not good enough. But I think in terms of the depth and your insurance against injury, if you know whoever you do end up getting a start coming in to be a starter, if that person gets injured, I think that they're well insured against that. And it's something. I mean, you gotta make a whole roster at some point, right? Somebody has to take those backup jobs. So, all in all, a chore, but one that needed to be done, and again, I assure you, one that does not preclude the Vikings from doing something else that you wanted them to do. If they don't do what you wanted them to do, it surely wasn't because they were, like, re-signing Dakota Dozier or whatever. So now let's get on with it. The rest of the show is going to be spent on draft prospects. We've got the prospect of the day coming up. That's going to be Tyler Johnson out of Minnesota, somebody that a lot of you really, really want the Vikings to draft. We're going to talk about him, when he should go, if he should go to the Vikings, etc. And then an actual mock draft. Now, I didn't go all the way on this mock draft. I only went for the first four rounds, mostly because I'm still getting a handle on the class, and I don't want to just like randomly, arbitrarily pick some randos in the sixth round that I don't know anything about, right? And as I research things more, these will become full seven-round mocks. But for now, it's just a four-round mock draft. And before we get into any of that stuff, I just want to like lay out again the rules for Mock Draft Monday. So the biggest rule that I think is going to make this different than other like mock draft series is that I will not be able to select a player on Mock Draft Monday that I've selected on a previous Mock Draft Monday. So like today, I've got the players that I've picked, and I won't be able to pick those players again next Monday and the Monday after that and so on and so forth. And so by the end of this, it's going to be not a great simulation of what the draft is, but a pretty good excuse to, you know, force us to kind of diversify and branch out and find new players to get to know. And again, that's the point of this, is to get to know prospects, not necessarily to construct the mock draft I think is the best. Though we might do that, you know, on a future day as part of a different exercise, who knows. The other thing is I'll be using for all of these the Draft Network predictive board. That is not the one that the Draft Network analysts have put together as like an amalgamation of all of their opinions and evaluations, which I do think is a more accurate version of a big board, but the predictive board is one that like takes into account what's happening in the mock drafts. So say that the analysts are like way too low on a player, and then that player gets drafted like higher than they think all the time. Like, say, somebody like Denzel Mims, who is ranked like 40th on their board right now. And say that person, say Denzel Mims gets taken in the 20s all the time, which could happen in real life. He'll kind of eventually get like pushed up the board because people keep taking him in mock drafts. And eventually that board will kind of even out. And I think that that predictive board and that process needs to keep existing, and people need to keep doing drafts. So go to the mock draft machine on the Draft Network and help them out and, tell them what they're wrong about by way of selecting those players in a mock draft. I'll, of course, link that in the show notes as well. But for the time being, I think it is a decent enough proxy for player evaluation. And so instead of making this like a thing where I say my takes about what wide receivers are better or whatever, I'm going to kind of defer to that. And if there's a player that's too far down the board, even if you think that there's like a first round player that's ranked 50th on that board, you could be right, but I'm not going to draft that person at 22. Just to keep my own takes and opinions out of it, this is more, again, just like an experiment to get to know guys and so that I can relate that information to you. So when I come back, we're going to talk about Tyler Johnson, the prospect of the day, and then we're going to get into that mock draft. So all that coming right up. Okay, so let's talk about Tyler Johnson out of Minnesota. Now, again, most of you guys, I think, are going to be Gophers fans. And if not, here's the deal with Tyler Johnson. He and Rashad Bateman, who will probably come out for the draft later, were kind of these two like premier receivers for the Golden Gophers. And so there are definitely going to be a lot of listeners out there who are very high on Tyler Johnson, who watched him, be this dynamic playmaker and catch all these big things down the field. But I kind of feel inclined to defer to people who aren't Gophers fans to evaluate the Gophers, because obviously there's just some bias that's going to be there. And especially people like the guys at the Draft Network or other draft analysts who are evaluating the entire class of receivers, because there are things that Tyler Johnson is very good at that show up a lot on tape that every wide receiver in this class is very good at. And so it's not like a differentiating factor. And that's the kind of thing that's going to separate a second round pick from a fifth round pick. So deferring to that stuff, here's what I get from Tyler Johnson. I see a lot of like veteranness. I see polish, and I see the idea of like a tactical route runner that can execute a plan very, very, very well and get the separation he needs to get based off of that. However, I do think that there are valid concerns about his athleticism. I think the lack of a pro day and all the COVID-19 stuff will exacerbate that and cause him to fall further down the board. I think his hands are good. I think he's good at finding a spot in the zone and finding the right place to be. And I think you get like a savvy, plug and play guy. And here's what I think. If the Vikings do end up taking him, which is totally in the cards, right? If they take him in the fourth round or whatever, I see him competing with like Tajay Sharp. I see him like trying to be the guy that is that like clutch third down, the guy, the Jarius Wright role that we've been looking for a while, right? That is what I see in Tyler Johnson. And there's a thing with wide receivers where you do kind of want some explosiveness, some playmaking ability. And I don't really see that with Tyler Johnson so much as I see somebody who can always execute the plan you need him to execute. And the Vikings have struggled needing that, right? Like, that would be an improvement for the Vikings, who have been dealing with guys like Laquon Treadwell, who could not do that, who could not release off the line of scrimmage at any sort of like reasonable rate and get open and run to the right spot. And I think you get that with Tyler Johnson easy. And I think it's important to not overdraft that kind of like, he's the floor, but he's only a floor, I guess is the way that I'm going to put it. And that's why I think he's been going in the fourth round. And I think that's a fair place to take a guy like that. If you draft a wide receiver in the fourth round and he turns into Jarius Wright, I think that's a good pick. And that's what the Vikings did. So I think I'd do it. But I also think that there's a lot of higher upside wide receivers I'd go for first. Because, you know, I want somebody that can be a little bit more of a dynamic playmaker. You know, wide receiver is a proactive position. That's a position that has to make things happen. And I'm much more interested in somebody that maybe has a lower floor but a higher ceiling in a position like that versus a position like offensive line, who's typically preventing things from happening, right? When you're a lineman or you're like a cornerback or a linebacker, you're trying to stop stuff from happening. And that's where you want the consistency and the kind of like level-headed, high floor kind of guy. You want at those positions, and I think springing for a higher ceiling and trying to get somebody, you know, trying to achieve a Stephon Diggs-esque accomplishment, and I will mention that I don't think the Vikings should look to, like, immediately replace Stephon Diggs. You got to get a good wide receiver, right, because that group is hurting really bad, but I don't think that going and finding the wide receiver who is most like Stephon Diggs is the move to do that. Like, go find a playmaker who makes plays his own way and adapt your scheme to that. Don't necessarily try to find somebody who won the way that Stephon Diggs won, but I digress. The point with Tyler Johnson is just don't overvalue him because he's a gopher. And I know that's difficult, and I don't necessarily want to accuse everybody of doing that. I think he's going in like the fourth round, and I think that that's probably appropriate for a guy who seems to be like a low ceiling, high floor, kind of steady Eddie sort of prospect. And I'd be a big fan of that in a wide receiver room that needs that. But I also understand that the Vikings are not Gophers fans. They're not going to just draft the Minnesota kid because he's a Minnesota kid. If they draft Tyler Johnson, it will be because they want the skill set that he offers. And I don't think his athleticism is an issue either before that kind of gets like blown out of proportion. Like, I don't think it's like a detriment and he won't have, you know, or like it'll stop him from being successful in the NFL. I think it just limits, you know, he's not a burner. And that's okay. Wide receivers can be non-burners. Like, that's totally fine. But I think that you have to compare that to people like, I mean, the most extreme, like a Henry Ruggs, right? Who ran like a 4.27. And Tyler Johnson, we didn't actually see a 40-yard dash, if I recall. He didn't run it at the combine, and he's not going to have one at a pro day. So we just kind of won't see that. And there are moments in his tape, especially in this last season, where you did see him struggle to like run away from cornerbacks and see him kind of get kept with stride for stride. I don't think that precludes him from being successful. I don't think that precludes him from being somebody that like is an NFL quality wide receiver, right? And being like a rosterable guy. I mean, I'm not saying he's a sixth or a seventh rounder or an undraftable pick or anything like that. But yeah, when there's a whole bunch of receivers in this class that have a higher ceiling than him, it's going to push him down the board. And I think that that's fair. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised to see the Vikings let all of those kind of high floor type, you know, reliable, we just need a rosterable guy. I wouldn't be surprised to see them all go away in the mid rounds in favor of them addressing other positions because they have Tajae Sharpe. And if you wanted to bring Tyler Johnson in to compete with Tajae Sharpe, I think that's totally healthy and something that would probably produce a better wide receiver group and at least a deeper one, right? But if you wanted to say go take an edge rusher with a high upside or go find a safety or something to fill out that depth more than you wanted somebody like Tyler Johnson, honestly, I could see myself supporting that move as well. When it comes to like day three of the draft, of course, it's going to be something that, you know, we kind of have to take pick by pick and look at who ends up on the board and who they're declining an opportunity to have to take whoever they take and stuff. But yeah, I would warn you to not be too attached to the idea of the Vikings drafting Tyler Johnson, because here's the thing. With a guy like that, teams tend to, especially with wide receivers, kind of back off of guys without high upside ceilings and crazy 40 times and three cone times and all this, like, you know, dynamic playmaking ability. They tend to stray away from that and pick the steady Eddies a lot later in the draft, maybe than they should. Maybe there's value to be had there. But I think that's going to apply to Tyler Johnson. And what I think is going to happen is Johnson will be available to the Vikings at a place where you think that they should pick him. And I wouldn't be surprised if they went a different direction. I wouldn't hate it if they took Tyler Johnson, but I certainly won't vilify them if and when they don't. But maybe that's just because I'm not as much of a gopher homer as a lot of Minnesotans are. So that's the first prospect of the day is Tyler Johnson. Welcome, everybody. Now we're going to do the mock draft. When we come back, we are going to do this. I only did the first four rounds this time. That should probably by next week, I'll be doing 7-round mocks. But also because I had a bunch of news to talk about, and so there's a time thing. We're just going to do 4 rounds today. And whoever I pick today, I will not be allowed to pick for the rest of draft season. So that'll be real fun. All that's coming up in just a second. Okay, let's get on with this mock draft. And so here's the deal. When this board came to me, a lot of the guys that we've talked about in previous mock draft Mondays and talked about so far were gone. Gladney was gone. Christian Fulton was gone. A lot of the tackles like Andrew Thomas and even like the big ones that fall every once in a while in these weird mock drafts were gone, like, you know, Jedrick Willis or whatever. And really, a lot of the wide receivers that you want are all gone, too. And it seems like guys like CeeDee Lamb and Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy, those are like the big three wide receivers, and they're all gone by pick 15 most of the time. So if we wanted to trade up, we would have to pay out the nose. And hey, maybe we will on one of these, because trades are definitely on the table, although I didn't do any this time just to keep it simple. So I ended up going with what the predictive board was telling me was the best wide receiver on the board. You may disagree with this, although we can get deeper into that at a later date, but that was Justin Jefferson this time. The only other wide receiver I would have thought about was like Jalen Reagor, although I do believe that Denzel Mims is also an option, or T. Higgins, some people like. All those guys were available as well, so we could have gone there, but I went with Justin Jefferson. And Jefferson is somebody that I think is suffering from something stupid, and that is that, unlike Tyler Johnson, I think his athleticism does not limit his ceiling, though it does not read as like actively exciting. And that's a really difficult like distinction to make. So to put it another way, I think Michael Thomas suffered from the same issue. And I'm not like comparing Justin Jefferson to Michael Thomas because that's dumb, but I do think that they are kind of experiencing a similar NFL draft narrative, which is that, you know, yeah, he does everything well, but like, what does he do really well? And I think that that's like a stupid thing that caused the league to, by and large, miss out on Michael Thomas because he went in the second round, and obviously that's stupid. And I think Justin Jefferson is experiencing kind of the same thing. So here's the deal with him. He's a good route runner. He's good at finding zones. Like, he's good at all that stuff. And in a way that, like, you don't have to teach him a new thing. Like, he comes out of the box ready to do that kind of thing. His speed is fine. He ran like a 4.43 at the combine. Like, that's plenty good. That's faster than Adam Thielen was. So that, consider that box checked. He's got great hands. He's got like all the tools you would ever want in a wide receiver, right? Here's the couple of things. For one, again, the athleticism is not, you know, he's not CeeDee Lamb. He's not Henry Ruggs. Those are the guys that are like, you know, these crazy dynamic human beings that are just going to like romp on lesser humans for you. And I think what you really see, like if you follow that logic, it's like, well, you know, if he's not as good of an athlete, then he can't win with just his athleticism like somebody like CeeDee Lamb probably can, or like somebody like Henry Ruggs probably can, or go like John Ross back in the day, right? Like that is somebody that can, you know, just win with athleticism and technique be damned. They're just going to like out jock you. And the thing about Justin Jefferson is that he's not going to have to do that. So it's not going to come up. His athleticism doesn't prevent him from doing anything. It doesn't prevent him from, you know, being like a winner at the stem of a route. I think he's a savvy route runner. He can do it like a veteran. He can come out of the box ready to contribute. And boy, the Vikings need that. And I think that because he has all that stuff, it lowers the athleticism that you need. It lowers the threshold you have to hit. And now Jefferson clears it by a mile. And I think that can turn into dynamic playmaking, even though it's not done with like just athleticism, which honestly is unsustainable anyways. I'd much rather have somebody come out of the box like Justin Jefferson does. And the other downside with him is that at LSU, he didn't have to deal with a lot of press. And part of that is, you know, did the SEC being the SEC. But another part is that he lined up in the slot quite a bit. Even though he's 6'3", he'd be like a big slot, and you might just have to keep him in the slot for his rookie year or first couple of years till you teach him how to release off the line. And he lined up in like off alignments a lot of the time. So LSU kind of seemed to be like hiding a releasing off the line of scrimmage problem. And I don't know if that's actually a problem or if it's just LSU making strange schematic decisions. But the point is, there's like a big question mark there. It's like, can he release versus like press coverage? You know, if he goes up against somebody like Jair Alexander, who's going to be right up in his face, is he going to be able to release off that line and not get knocked off? Now, I think at 6'3 and a 192, I don't know. I think he's going to be fine with that. I think he's got the length and stuff, and I don't really care about it that much, but I think that that's like going to be the thing that causes him to not be a part of the group of Jerry Judy's and Henry Ruggs's and etc. But other than that, I think the knocks about him are ones that I don't care about. I think he can get separation, he can win on routes, and he can execute what you need to do, and he can do a little bit more than that. So I'm taking him at 22. The next guy that came down was, now that I got wide receiver coming, of course, Denzel Mims and Jordan Love went in the next two picks. And I'll be honest, part of this is just saving Denzel Mims for later in one of these. But the next guy that I took the best tackle left on the board, and that was Josh Jones. So in this draft, there are a whole bunch of tackles who are kind of, I guess, like athletic, but have things to learn. And some of them are downright raw, like Ezra Cleveland or Prince Tegeuanogo. And then there are some like Josh Jones, I wouldn't call him like raw, but I would definitely say that there are issues that need to be worked out before he's a starting quality player. He's got some pad level issues on his pass sets. He's a little bit clunky with his movements and in terms of his footwork that could be smoothed out. There's some coaching that needs to be done there. And when it is done, he would project to be an elite tackle. He has all the length and like bodily traits that you want. And it's extremely Vikings-y to take a guy like that. I actually think that Brian O'Neill coming out was very similar, where he had some issues, and I actually thought they were a lot worse than the issues that Josh Jones is working with. So, you know, take that as you will. And I think that his issues, when you give him a year to like redshirt behind Riley Reiff, which is what would happen with like any of these guys, unless you like trade up for Jedrick Willis or something crazy, if you give him that year, it is like more than enough time to fix the problems that Josh Jones has. Like, his problems are not nearly what you would need. Like, with Ezra Cleveland or Prince Tegeuanogo, you would have to like teach them techniques from scratch. That's difficult to do in a year. I think like, hey, you got to tweak his footwork a little bit and teach him to, you know, come out with a better pad level. Like, that's fine. You could totally do that in a redshirt year and have Riley Reiff come be your left tackle, be average at that position for one more year, and then hope that you improve and get a little cheaper. I like that plan, and I'm totally down for it. I'm not huge on Josh Jones as like a guy that we must commit to taking. I think there are definitely other options here. Cesar Ruiz is somebody that people have been mocking to the Vikings lately, which I think is kind of weird. I mean, there's other guys that were available, like Neville Gallimore, who is a defensive lineman out of Oklahoma. You could have gone another wide receiver, like Jalen Reagor was there, and you could have picked somebody else at 22. There's a lot of options, and Josh Jones is just one of them, but it's one that I think that I would definitely support. So we got Justin Jefferson and Josh Jones. We got wide receiver and tackle handled. Now we got to do some stuff with the secondary, and that's what I'm going to do with the next pick. So we wait all the way until pick 58, and then I'm taking somebody who I'm kind of developing a crush on. As you saw, if you follow me on Twitter, you saw me tweet that last night. I like Ashton Davis, safety out of California, quite a bit. He is very versatile, I think, is the thing that jumped out to me, and that's what Mike Zimmer needs. So the thing about Mike Zimmer's defense, and I hope we get to learn more about this in the coming days, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But the thing about Zimmer's defense is that it is very, very versatile. There's a lot of coverage shells. You know, you hear about the Seahawks, they run a cover three. The Vikings don't really have anything like that. They don't run a cover this. They have some cover three, they have some cover two, they have some cover four. They play man match, they play zone match, they play like everything. And the genius of it, and this is what makes Mike Zimmer like a famous defensive mind, is that he's really good at dialing up those coverages at times when they're appropriate. And having a team that can play like any coverage shell makes it really difficult for quarterbacks to read what's going on. And then you start rolling those coverages and disguising alignments and throwing blitzes in there, and it becomes a very difficult defense to play against. That's kind of what makes it good. But to do that, you need safeties that are capable of doing everything. And I want to just look at Harrison Smith for a sec. Harrison Smith can do all of it. He can cover in like man-to-man coverage a lot better than when he came out. That was kind of a weakness of his that he's improved on a lot. He can be in the box and be physical. He can play zone. He can go jump a route and try to get an interception. You know, Harrison Smith can do all of those things. I think Anthony Harris offers you that as well. And he didn't used to when he came out, right? He was too small and he was kind of just a rangy guy. And I think Ashton Davis comes out of the box as that versatile guy that you need. Now, there are a couple of concerns. One is range. He has a debatable range is what I'll call it, because there are conflicting accounts. Some people say, yeah, his range is fine. He can do cover two. He can do what you ask. And then some people have concerns about him being a single high safety and kind of covering the entire depth of the field. And that is something that the Vikings would need him to do. And here's the kicker. He didn't run at the combine because he was going to run at his pro day. But of course, because of COVID-19, his pro day was canceled. And so he won't be able to run there. But he was a Pac-12 champion hurdler. And I think that that requires enough acceleration. And I think you see enough acceleration where I'm okay chancing it on his range. He's physical. He's heady. He's he can just like pop guys, actually. And he can read an offense and kind of pick up the complexities that a Zimmer defense would need the safety to pick up. So I really like this guy in the second round right now. And because of the pro day thing, he might fall a lot further, and so this might be inefficient, but he was there around this place in the predictive board, so I took him here. The next guy I took is follows a similar mold. It's Amik Robinson, a cornerback out of Louisiana Tech. Now, I know that we all want Antoine Winfield Jr., but he actually gives me more Antoine Winfield vibes because he's 5'9", and he just, like, pops guys. And that's what I always remember about Antoine Winfield is that he was short and he would just, like, light guys up twice his size, and it makes no sense. And I feel like Amik Robertson kind of has that same thing. Of course, his size is going to be a huge issue, right? A 5'9 corner, that's a problem, and you're going to have to either keep him in the nickel, put him at strong safety. But I see that versatility, and I think that adding him to the room, and then you can probably kick Mike Hughes outside, and hopefully you have something else, or you trust Holton Hill or whatever, and you have to figure something else out at the cornerback position, because in this particular mock, we've kind of neglected it, going for wide receiver and tackle in the first round. But you could also put Ashton Davis in nickel and figure something else out that way. So I think you can figure it out. We've added two players to the secondary here that hopefully can somehow be configured to have a reasonable secondary, or hope that, you know, somebody comes in, like, even it, like, bring in the corpse of Tremont Williams or something to play outside, just so that you can have, like, something of a starting quality level. And I think that, like, we've made it easier to construct a secondary, and I think you're within reach of creating something that's acceptable to put on the field come the start of the season with these two guys being added to the secondary. So that brings us to the compensatory third we got for Sheldon Richardson, the 105th pick. That I'm going with another tackle, and it's one that I think people in Minnesota are going to like, the St. John kid, Ben Bartsch. He's one of the only combine people who came out of, like, that D3 schooling, and he's somebody that I think is a big story in the draft that we've all heard of, and maybe that's, I might be a little biased towards him just because there's a lot of guys that I'm not familiar with yet. But so he comes out of St. John, and I think he's got enough mobility to be, like, a zone blocking scheme guy. He's got a lot of work to do with his pass sets, and he's, like, going to be a lot rawer. But because I got Josh Jones earlier, like, I'm kind of okay taking a swing at this one and trying to get another tackle, and then eventually I'll have, you know, I can let everything else go, and I can have under rookie contracts, maybe by, like, next year, if it all works out, I could have Josh Jones at left tackle, Brian O'Neill at right tackle, and Ben Bartsch being the swing, and I could let Rashad Hill and Riley Reiff go, save a bunch of money, and that'll help me with other problems. That would be the hope with a pick like this. And then finally, this is going to be a kind of pick that I make a lot in these, is going to be the, like, raw edge rusher. I think giving Andre Patterson these, like, raw putty in his hands kind of guys is a really good process. I'm taking Alton Robinson, edge rusher out of Syracuse. He's got an explosive first step. He's got a lot of athleticism. He needs to work on his, like, pass rush counters and he needs to work on a lot of things, right? And so you can't exactly put him on the field right away, but I love as a fourth round pick, somebody with high upside who, hey, maybe he's out of the league and he totally flames out and doesn't make the team, but, you know, next year, maybe he's somebody like a Jaleel Johnson, who I think is going that way. But I that is an okay risk for me to take in the fourth round, and I'm pretty happy about the upside that he provides. And I think an explosive first step and being quick off the line is something that helps Mike Zimmer teams quite a bit, because if you have to be worried about that guy at the snap and you have to, like, almost lock into somebody, like, I think Sharif Floyd was a god at this. This was what Everson Griffin was so good at, because he would time the snap counts. And I think if you have that explosive first step, it makes it really, really difficult to read and counteract blitzes and stunts and some of the fancy stuff that Zimmer throws in. So I think that it's particularly helpful to the Vikings to have somebody with an explosive first step at as many positions along the defensive line as possible. So that's going to be where we cut off this mock draft. I didn't do any of the fifth, sixth, or seventh round picks. There's, like, I don't know, 100 more guys that the Vikings are going to draft after that. And we'll get to those in future mocks, but we're running out of time here. So I'm going to wrap up this episode of Locked On Vikings. I will see you all tomorrow. We'll talk about whatever news. Otherwise, we'll keep going with the draft content and future prospects of the day. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. The show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, or just ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I'll see y'all tomorrow, and as always, Skol.